This episode of Your Favorite Band is brought to you by Bombas. Did you know that the most requested item at homeless shelters is socks? Bombas is trying to help that by donating a pair of socks for every pair bought. You can get your pair for 20% off by going to getbombas.com/favoriteband. Welcome to episode 2 of the Your Favorite Band podcast. Words can't even describe how excited I am for this episode, and we'll get to that in just a second. Real quick, though, a couple of things. First, thank you guys so much. Episode 1 came out 2 weeks ago, and great response. We're really pleased with how many people have found us so far, and we hope that we continue to grow. And we need your help doing that. There's a few ways that you can help us continue to grow our listener base so that we can do more things, including maybe going weekly. Right now we're bi-weekly. We'd like to go weekly eventually, but you guys can help with that. One thing you can do is leaving a review on iTunes helps out a lot. So if you guys don't mind, go to iTunes, leave a review. I haven't talked to Dave about this, but if we get 10 reviews before our next episode, Dave will release a song that he wrote when he was a teenager, when he was just a kid. We'll play that. It's really bad. We'll play that song. So 10 reviews this week, that'd be super helpful. So if you're listening to this and maybe this is your first episode, review it afterwards. But if you listen to the first episode and you like what you're hearing so far, go to iTunes and review us. The second thing you can do is, we have a sponsor, Bombas. And if you guys don't mind, helping us out by going and buying some socks, it helps them out. It helps the homeless community out, but it also helps us out. We get a little bit of kickback from that. So if you don't mind doing that, that'd be super duper awesome. And the last thing you could do is just spread the word, share the website link, yourfavoritebandpodcast.com, everywhere, Reddit, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere, share it. We want as many people to hear this as possible because we want to hear from you guys. yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com. We want to know who you want to hear us interview, talk about their discography and all that good stuff. We want to do that with your favorite bands because we're doing it with mine right now and I'm having a blast doing it, but we want to talk to your favorite bands as well. Your favorite band at yourfavoritebandpodcast@gmail.com. That's it. So just reviewing on iTunes, supporting our sponsors, and spreading the news. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you get them every 2 weeks automatically without even having to think about it. And also, if you don't mind, joining our mailing list, the Your Favorite Band family. We will start sending you guys some exclusive stuff in the near future. So get that going so we can start doing that. Without further ado, Dave, how are you? What are you doing up there in New York, my friend?
Oh, you know, just chilling.
Yeah.
Like villain, as they do.
Yeah, sure. I don't even know what that means. It is a really good day. Because I think when we started this podcast, we had one band in particular that we were like, if we get this, we'll be okay. Right. We could quit after this. And we did it today. We're excited to... Oh, first, we got to do this. Dave, first time you saw this band, when was it?
Rock the Universe. You know,
just hey, cool.
Rock the Universe. That's.
Do you know the year?
No. Yeah. I should have looked it up. I'm trying to think. See, the thing is, I saw you guys in multiple festival situations before I finally got to see you in an actual, like, bar headline show.
Totally.
It was a daunting thing for me to finally get it. I think it would probably have been maybe it was while I was in, maybe like 2007 or 8, maybe. It was late.
Yeah. Wow, late really? That's amazing. Yeah. I saw them pretty early on at a I don't even remember the name of it. It was a Christian nightclub in Orlando. I don't remember the name of it, but it was a while ago. But we're excited. Reliant K, Matt, and Matt, how are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great. We're just racking our brains about a Christian nightclub
in Orlando. That would have been 2001.
It was a while ago. Whatever it is, it was early on, I think. Anywho, it was actually my first concert ever. Fun fact.
Hey, oops. I'm ready to do those jokes.
Yeah. all right. Well, let's get going. The idea of this podcast is that we get to figure out how people's favorite bands became who they are today. And so we do that by walking through the life and the history of the band. So let's go to early on, the beginning of Reliant K. Talk about, Dave, you had the first question, I think. What's the first question?
The first thing I was going to say is this is kind of a weird moment, because the reason I know what podcast, or the reason I found out what podcasts were, was the Reliant K. You guys remember that audio podcast you guys did like forever ago? It started off as an audio podcast, then you switched to video like after 8 episodes.
Connected it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
I didn't even know what an audio podcast was. The process of getting my computer to download it was such an adventure that I felt like I had a golden nugget by the time that I finally, and then I was subscribed, and it was so cool because that was the first time I had audio that I was subscribed to. It was such a neat feeling. But then it changed to video, and I was like, man, this is the way the world's going. And now here we are. Now you guys are on a podcast again. It's great. But actually, the album that you guys, do you remember the, it looks like the artwork is maybe made in Microsoft Paint. It's got the tractor on it. All work, no play.
Oh, yeah. I think Microsoft Paint's pretty good guess. What was it, Microsoft?
I think it was actually Microsoft Word.
Yeah, I used Word.
Oh, you found your way to the colors? Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So that was like how did you guys put that album out? Was that did you do that by yourselves, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I paid for it with my own money. I was working probably at Wendy's at the time, or I was a busboy at an Amish restaurant, and I saved up some money. I had like, I don't know, $1,500, $2,000 that I put into making 1,000 copies of All Work and No Play. And I figured if we sold them for $10 a piece, I'd get my money back. And I just remember getting my money back.
You eventually did and get his money back.
Yeah. And then, you know, the band never really went broke since then. Yeah, it was the only thing.
You never had to make another investment.
Yeah, we were never in debt.
Oh, my.
So a lot of the songs from that album are what translated into the first album and a little bit of the second album, if I remember correctly. Yeah. So how did the process go from you guys creating that album to moving in 2000 to putting out your first album with Goatee? How did you guys transition to do that?
It was all pretty contingent on this guy, Mark Townsend, who was involved with,
right.
You know, we call it demos now. All Work and No Play was basically the demo phase, but we just make copies of our demo. And then, Goatee wasn't totally sold on us as a band. They didn't promise us any money to make an album, but Mark Townsend basically thought we had enough songs, and we worked really hard on, the self-titled record. And then when we were done, they gave Mark, $15,000 for doing it, which probably, wasn't enough money. But we put a lot into it. And then we were signed to Goatee Records at that point.
Nice. So that that first album, you get to see a good mixture of pop culture references, songs about faith, fun songs, serious songs. Early on, did you guys know that you wanted to set out to do a little bit of both serious and fun and goofy, or is it just kind of how it came out and it worked?
Yeah, I mean, we really enjoyed stupid bands that made fun of themselves and threw bananas into the crowd and stuff. we thought that was cool. And
not naming any names, but there are bananas involved.
Yeah. You know, Matt Hoops, you always like Weird Al. I always liked a band called Ween. That was pretty funny.
Right.
I don't know. And They Might Be Giants. I don't know. There's fun to be had.
Yeah, even like the Weezer Blue album, like Buddy Holly and, you know.
Cake and Ben Folds. They have a sense of humor. And I don't know. So we like that. And then we were also, I don't know, we listened to a lot of Christian pop punk bands. And so we wanted to be like all of them. So there's a band called the Huntingtons, you know.
Yeah.
They had an album called, what was it called? It was Fun and Games or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great. It was good.
The thing that like it's amazing about that is it somehow it makes it the serious songs are still able to be serious though, you know, and that's where I think that you guys struck gold, because a lot of bands kind of pick to be serious and then they kind of aren't taken serious for doing anything that's fun. And then on the flip side, if you're a band that does a lot of fun songs, as soon as you switch the gears, people kind of tune out. But you guys had this amazing thing where you could listen to an album and like tell that there's seriousness in the midst of the jokes and kind of in the midst of the clever puns and quips and stuff like that. It also had like an overarching kind of direction. And so did you guys have a mission statement, not a mission statement, but you know what I mean? Like a goal as a band besides making good music.
No, I like mission statement. I think that's what it was, you know, was just balance. Let's find some balance and let's be ourselves and it'll be good, you know? Yeah. And, some people don't think the serious songs are serious. They don't take the serious songs seriously, and that's okay too, you know. So some people, it's just a joke band, but you know, it's just good to be ourselves. And you know, it's not 100% of who we are either. Reliant K isn't Matt Hoops and Matt Thiessen together, you know, that's a different thing. But it also is something that Matt Hoops and Matt Thiessen do together, and it's good.
Sure.
Yeah, I think there's something about making a funny song that is different from, say, like a funny tweet or a funny video even, or a funny making jokes at your shows. There's something about making a funny song that just requires a different, it's almost like more like stand-up comedy or something.
Yeah.
So. And also it comes back to haunt you a little bit too, you know, when you're these old songs and you're like, oh, this joke is not that funny.
Right.
It's not as funny as it once was. Where, you know, I mean, I was just thinking about when you said that question, I was thinking of bands that are kind of serious and funny. And I can't think of a lot.
Yeah. Bare Naked Ladies.
You know, or I thought of, do you guys ever see that Mumford and Sons video?
Yeah.
That they did, and they had
Reward Helms guys.
That really made you say, okay, they're not taking themselves seriously in a cool way. They're poking fun at themselves, and it comes across really great. But still, the song wasn't a joke. You know, the song was just a normal song.
Yeah. Walk through the streets of PA, and you may see her. Go up to her and say you're a believer.
As you guys went into the studio after that for Tongue in Cheek, you're on this label and you're heading into it. Did you feel a lot of pressure going into this? Did you feel pressure to make it? Like, this is the one that it's either make or break for us as far as being on a label now, or was it just kind of like, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing and hope for the best?
No, there wasn't really any thoughts of that. We knew that the sound had to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we had to get better at playing our instruments. And I don't know, we weren't thinking about doing anything, you know. The third record, that's when, maybe there was a little bit of that thought. Like, oh, I need to do something. I started to see an audience, you know, with third record, and I saw an audience that would go to Warped Tour, and I saw an audience that would go to a Christian festival.
Yeah.
And I tried to like blend them together and write to that person, you know, in a certain way. And then obviously being myself, which is, you know, mostly what it is anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then fourth record, that was just fun to write. I don't know. That one was easy to write. And then, fifth record was when it started to feel like a story you've heard before, you know, where a band's on a major label and, you know, people are making decisions and it's all serious. So that, you know, that's
it,
where
it definitely felt like a lot more pressure. Yeah. All the way around, it felt like a lot more pressure. I remember, you know, it was the first time we had done any, tracked any instruments or sang with a producer that wasn't Mark, you know? And so we were walking in, I can remember being like, oh man, can I actually play guitar? You know, can I play good enough for these people? Or can, you know, are we enough band to make this type of record and spend this much money? You know, it felt kind of, all of that whole world felt very foreign to us.
And that feels like the kind of culmination on Five Score of you guys' ability to do the serious and the fun, because that was a situation where the stakes were really high, but you still kind of were able to, like, I don't know, to pull off an 11-minute song that, like, does what it does. It's amazing that you were able to get that on that same album. It's incredible. It's super cool.
You know, interestingly enough, Matt said, you know, that was the album where we didn't work with Mark Townsend, but Mark Townsend
did
one song on it, you know. And that's, it was almost like, you know, you treat Deathbed maybe as an EP that comes at the end of the album. You know, it's almost two different animals, but it was cool to have it all be at the same time. I like the way the intro and that sort of stuff for that whole album tied in with Deathbed, and it seemed good.
Yeah.
There's a song called Stenographer that we probably should have just put on it, but we were scared back then. But yeah, it came out on
It's on the B-sides record now, that song,
Gotcha, yeah.
Right.
Smell the death on the sheet covering me. I can't believe this is the end. I can hear those sad memories still haunting me. So many things I do. My deathbed, I lie here alone. If I close my eyes tonight.
We want to touch a little bit on, of course, just it was such a big album. I remember watching you guys on MTV. You had this whole the special playing at Hard Rock, I think, and stuff like that. Was that like a wild time for you guys where you're like just kind of looking at behind you and being like, I don't know how we got to this point, but it's really freaking fun.
Yeah, there are definitely moments where, I don't know what we, I guess our mantra in those situations is like, could you imagine telling your 15-year-old self, your 14-year-old self, your 16, 17-year-old self that you're going to stand here and do this for, you know, for your job someday. And, you know, there's going to be a hoopla about what you're doing. That's pretty cool. You know, and there's a lot of things that Reliant K got to do that, you know, I don't know if we've done anything that no band has ever done, but we've done a lot of things that not every band gets to do. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember being the first time that we played the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and we actually were able to do, we did that three times, I think. And the first time we were playing it, I remember just right before we started playing and we were doing Be My Escape, and they bring up this garage door and they bring it up really quick and then you're just on. And I remember just being completely weirded out right before, you know, and I don't even really have to sing, you know, Matt had like the hard job on that. But I remember just being so just like, what strange life am I in right now that, you know, we're playing on Jay Leno. And as I started playing the guitar, I started out that song on guitar. And as I started playing, right. I realized that I had forgotten to turn my in-ears on. And so like I can't hear anything. I'm just like, oh no. So it was pretty funny.
That's so funny.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And the cool thing that happened on, well, I guess actually all the albums, I was the exact age to where every time that you guys put out an album, you had migrated kind of where my taste was going. You know, like I was super into punk, and then you guys slowly were moving into more dynamic sounding music. And I remember like hearing is there like a banjo on some of the stuff? And I remember hearing like, and so that's that kind of stuff drew me in so much because I loved the kind of different instrumentation. I know that you guys play different instruments when I saw you play live and stuff. And I think that was that more fun to go into and making an album, getting to kind of diversify your the music that you got to play and the instruments that you use?
Yeah, I think that's a really great privilege you have, you know, being in a band. People say, hey, go in the studio. And when you go in the studio, you can pick stuff up and make noise with it. And sometimes,
right.
You know, the most fun you can have is, you know, just pulling the lever and seeing what instruments, you know, you land on. And it can be, anything can be cool, anything can be fun. And I don't know, with software instruments being as, you know, great as they are and as infinite as they are, making
right.
sounds, you know, a banjo sound, I mean, I don't know, you can either get a real banjo or you can mess with a fake one, or I don't know, but it's fun to do both. It's fun mm-hmm. to still go back and play the real instruments.
Yeah. When I think back on that time, I mean, I remember doing interviews then, and I remember it just kind of feeling funny. You know, you get asked, you know, what are you listening to right now? It'd be like Sufjan Stevens' "Greetings from Michigan," mm-hmm. or like, you know, yes. stuff that has banjo. That's kind of strange. And that is what we were really into for making that record. And in some ways, I remember thinking putting banjo on that record and featuring it the way we did, not in a bluegrass way and not really even in an right. indie way, just like way, kind of felt like the most punk rock thing we could do. And tying that back to our new record, even, I've answered this about our song Empty House that is a lot of like auto-tuner and vocoder effects.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, in some ways that seems like the most punk rock thing we could do like right now.
That's, yeah.
It's jarring. It's like, wait, what are you guys even doing? Yeah. So that, it's kind of our way, you know?
Well, and for me, when I get on the same instrument I played a million times, I end up writing the same type of stuff over and over again. But as soon as you kind of like throw a cog in the mix, like it changes up everything. Kind of even just changing the tuning of something can all of a sudden make you feel like a kid again. So that's a huge pull to do something like that. But actually the song that makes me think of is when I listened to by the Eagles, the song they have, what's it called? Take It Easy, or the been running down the road trying to loosen my load. And they sneak a banjo in that song too, where you don't really expect it, and then all of a sudden you realize that you're really enjoying the banjo. And that's the same thing that you guys did, which is super awesome. No, I don't hate you. Don't want to fight you. No, I'll always love you, but right now I just don't like you. No, I don't hate you. Don't want to fight you. No, I'll always love you, but right now I just don't like you. Because you took this too far.
We talked a little bit about Five Scores, so we'll go into Forget and Not Slow Down and talk about that album. It seems like a really personal album. There's not really any goofy fun songs. It's heavy musically. The direction is different musically. So talk about that one and just kind of, was it a natural thing to change musically heading into that to make it like, man, this is a rock album? Or how did it come to be what it is now?
Yeah, I guess it was, I wanted to write a rock album. That was kind of it. You know, I had a thing that I was, you know, that I wanted to write a whole album about, and so I did it. And yeah, that was fun. It was, you know, it's like a concept record when the concept is reality. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's fun to do.
Yeah.
Tom Petty did that one time, and I think it was a really bad record. So, do you know that record, Hoops? The really bad Tom Petty. What's it called? Anyway.
I can't remember the name of it. But
yeah, he even says it's not that great. But it's, yeah. So anyway,
yeah. So as you were writing it and just when you decided I'm going to write an album about this, was that a difficult decision to make that I'm really going to put myself out here and my emotions and this personal stuff? Yeah. Like, was that a difficult decision to make?
No, it was just something I wanted to do. You know, it just seemed logical, so I did it.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been foolish of me, I think, to do anything other than write an album.
Sure.
That was just how I want to deal with it. So, I mean, the Therapy was probably one of the first songs on it, you know. It's just like, I need to write some music and, you know, be good. So I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I remember going into the recording of that record and feeling like, oh my goodness, this record isn't even done. I don't, like, what is this going to possibly turn out to be? And it was really special how things kind of came together, and you know, the sound of that record was kind of forged, and you know, I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud of how it came together, and I don't think it would be the same if it had been more thought out on the front end. So,
And that's probably, I think me and Brandon agree, that's like our favorite album is Forget Not Slow Down. I don't know why that album just, it's again, that's since I, like I said, my taste in music kind of evolved exactly the same way you guys did. And it was crazy how you guys met there on like the kind of sound. Cause Hoops, you like your guitar tone evolves exactly at the way that my geekiness at guitar tone was evolving, and you kind of like just hit these sweet spots where it just sounded so good. And that album, like, it was this perfect ability to be clever, but in a such a thoughtful way. You know what I mean? Like, just like you'd always been doing, you always kind of have a way of phrasing things kind of in a more thoughtful way. But just that album did it. It was just great. Bram, what do you think?
Cool.
Yeah, I love it, and it has meant a lot to me over the years. So thanks for writing that, and thanks for being vulnerable. It's time to decide. She's out of my mind. 'Cause it'll be me unless I put some thoughts to rest and leave some faults behind. I'll watch the glint in my eye shine out the spring in my step. And it could be blinding depending on the amount of you. All right, going to take a quick timeout and remind you guys about our sponsor, Bombas. They sell socks. You can buy them. And every time you buy a pair of socks, they're going to donate a pair to a homeless shelter, because socks are actually the most requested item from homeless shelters. And you can get 20% off your first pair of socks by going to getbombas.com/favoriteband. That's getbombas.com/favoriteband. Let's get back to the interview. That brings us to Collapsible Lung. You took a little break. You wrote the karaoke album. You went to Collapsible Lung. By far, probably the most polarizing of your albums, I think. And for better or for worse, whatever that means. I've heard you said that you think that Collapsible Lung was the album that you needed to put out at that time. What do you mean by that when you say that? Why do you think it was?
You know, I guess what, in the grand scheme of the band and all that, it was time to kind of lay off the gas a little bit, which is kind of what you said. You know, we took a break, and then to kind of get back into it, at the time, my life involved going to people's studios or houses or whatever and meeting someone and writing a song with them. And seeing how it turns out, and then, you know, hope that somebody puts it out on a record. So since I was doing that so much, I just decided to start doing it for Reliant K, and Hoops would come with me, and we'd just sit and we'd meet someone new, and we'd write a song, and some of them were a little weird, and I don't know, some of them were trying to be dancey or whatever. And then there was songs I wrote then that, I don't know, I didn't really care too much about, and I think I really enjoyed that about them. I enjoyed singing them because I wasn't attached to them, and it was something that I just wanted to do. And then we wrote a couple songs that maybe could have been on a Reliant K record if we would have just written a Reliant K record at the time. And Don't Blink's one of them. I think Collapsible Lungs another one of them. You know, if we would have an album of those two songs, would have been a different animal. But I think that's kind of what Air for Free got to be. And, you know, the Look on Up single and all that stuff.
Yep. Just looking back at it, it was interesting. I remember it came out and was reading reviews and stuff like that. And there was, just people that were like, it was co-written obviously. So there were like people that listened to it and were like worried, oh man, is Reliant K a Christian band anymore? Was that a frustrating thing as it was happening? Were you just like, this is really frustrating and really annoying that people are talking about it based off these songs?
I don't really listen to a lot of that, but, I mean, that stuff is great to get people talking about Christianity. You know, that's kind of what they always say is like, you know, if somebody's thinking about it, then they're thinking about it. Yeah. And that's cool. You know, and I don't know. I've always liked, you know, making people think about it. And I thought that would be, I don't know. I don't think Reliant K did anything on Collapsible Lung that, I don't know. Is your mom mad about any of it? My mom's never objected to it, and that's kind of always the litmus. I mean, whether or not we want to say it, but I mean, we really try not to offend Marva and Elizabeth.
My mom did say she wasn't a huge fan of the fact that we said sucks.
Yeah, my mom would never like that word either.
Life is gonna suck some days.
Mm. Yeah, I wrote that song. And
that's
funny.
That's the classic one. Air for Free seems like a follow-up to Forget Not Slow Down. Was that intentional? Did you feel that as you were writing it, that it kind of was felt like that?
No, but it did not feel that like that either, you know? I wasn't there was a few moments like in the song Man where I think I was, you know, kind of hinting at that album and some references and stuff like that. But, you know... it's been a long time since Forget Not Slow Down, so it didn't really feel that close for me.
Right.
Yeah. I love this album, and I love it because I think it's just a really fun album. It's the lyrics are really great. And it's also really long, which is really nice. It's like 16 tracks. So, talk about the kind of how you guys chose 16 rather than like, you know, Look on Up didn't make it. Talk about why the songs made it and how you got to 16 and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I just didn't want to, I don't know. I didn't get the album done in a short amount of time. So I think, having more songs when I was finished with it felt like a compromise sort of thing. Like, this is almost an album and a half, so don't give me any guff about taking too long to write it sort of deal. But, and that was, as I was finishing the album and, you know, what I thought was finishing the album, I would want to write a new song. And I was like, okay, that one can go on it. And, you know, that happened several times. Air for Free is one of them. You know, Empty House was kind of just not intended to be on the record. Prodigal was definitely not intended to be, you know, these are just things that happened as we were finishing the album up. And
And I honestly think if we would have kept pushing the record back, it could have been 19 or 20 or 20 songs.
Yeah, some that didn't make it.
And yeah, and there's some that didn't quite make it. And I don't know if we had like a process for choosing the songs that fit on it, other than these are the ones that are done that we feel good about? And also, I think the other common thread is that we felt like some of these songs really do make sense in the context of this record, especially, you know, mm-hmm. like if we're not going to put them out now, then, you know, this is like the time. So yeah. for a lot of these.
Okay, so one kind of wrap-up question that I guess kind of spans all these albums. I'll try not to make it too long-winded of a question. Has your inspiration for what, like the songs that you write, as it's changed from, you know, pop punk band that was in 2000 to now, has your inspiration changed? And also, what is the effect of kind of changing members and going down to now two Matts done to your kind of the feeling of being in a band, Reliant K?
That's good. Yeah, let's start with the
what part of the
last
question.
Yeah, we'll start with the members thing. You know, Brian Pittman was our first bass player, and
right.
it was really three of us. That was kind of how the band started. That all work and no play. We had a drummer, but I mean, I guess you could say. I mean, the drummer really was implemental too, because the first time he played with us, we're like, holy crap, we're a real band, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but he quit, I guess, right? He just quit.
Yeah, yeah. He got a job doing something with computers. I don't know.
Yeah, but he quit yeah. before we ever put out a real album. And
biggest mistake of his life.
No, I mean, he actually did ask to be back in the band at a certain point later on, but he was a good guy, but yeah, he was a little bit older than us, and he didn't like the punk rock stuff as much. He was more
gotcha.
Into some different music. And so the next drummer that we got after that, I think he asked us to pay him $1,000 to do it. Like the next mm-hmm. official drummer that we had, he said, hey, I want to get engaged to my girlfriend. If you give me $1,000, I'll join your band. And
he would quit his other band.
No, but he kind of didn't quit his other.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah. And then things got crazy after that, because he broke up with that girl that he's supposed to get engaged to, and I he dated some girl that I liked, and it was a bunch of nonsense.
I forget about all this stuff. This is so funny.
Yeah. So anyway, man. From that point on, it was just me, Hoops, and Pittman. And then Pittman quit after the third record. And it's a little bit, I don't know, it's a bummer.
Halfway through the fourth, really.
Yeah, halfway through making the fourth album, Pittman quit.
Yeah.
You know, we had differences. I guess, you know, I was probably being a hothead around Canton, Ohio, and I don't know. I think just, I don't know. I didn't take he and his girlfriend's relationship very seriously. We were 24 years old at the time, 23, whatever. And so he got mad at me, and I don't know, but he didn't always love touring and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, I think if anything, we feel like Brian was this other front, you know, talking in this span of our career, you know, even though he only played with us on the road for a few years, we always kind of felt connected to him as far as like we started this thing together out of nothing.
Yeah.
Right.
So he was originally under like the contract of Reliant K or whatever. It was always just after that drummer that we paid $1,000 did end up quitting Reliant K. And so me, Hoops, and Pittman signed the thing together. And then when Pittman quit, we had to like buy him out, and so then it just went down to me and Matt on paper, and so it's just been like,
and it's kind of stayed that way. It's been that way since what, 2003 or something.
Yeah.
So it is funny though, our LLC name is still
THP.
THP Entertainment for Tees and Hoops Pittman.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, my wife saw it the other day. She's like, what's THP? Like,
yeah.
Tees and Hoops Pittman.
So funny.
Baby. Yeah.
It's our
awesome
jingle.
Yeah. So, go back that far in time. We've had some amazing people play with us, some amazing friends that have been very instrumental.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively. And
what we asked of everybody that toured with the band was to, contribute like you want to be a part of the creative process. And if you don't have to. But, everybody really always liked to pitch in.
And like those podcasts, that was John Schneck.
Right.
The Woodland Forest stuff was cool.
Yeah, that was John.
Was great.
Yeah, so.
John Warren did that stuff.
Yeah, so everyone kind of did their things, and it was still really fun, but, especially with Ethan and John leaving in 2013, so that kind of has been the story, even more so since then is, it's just me and Matt and our friends. We've had our friend Tom play bass and drums with us.
Dan, Jeremy both played bass.
Yeah, we've had a bunch of friends play bass. And it's, we're at the stage in life where people have other things to do with their life, with their time. And, people are getting married and having babies and,
Matt's daughter peed in his car today.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out how to get that into the interview tonight.
Oh man,
that she peed on my car seat.
Wow,
it was pretty bad.
That's impressive.
Yeah,
you had to get it all the way to it.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. So, we've had a lot of friends, and then. I don't know. I think the story has been since then just Matt and I and friends, and let's have fun doing that.
Yeah.
So
it's great. Cool, man. Thank you guys so much. This has been a treat for us. It means a lot that you would join us. You guys, your music has meant a lot to us growing up as musicians. And as we've tried to write stuff ourselves, you're one of those guys that we listen to and we're like, man, let's just give that a try. So thank you for that. And thanks for letting us walk through your bio and talking with us about that. We really appreciate it, man.
And,
thank you guys. Good night.
Best of luck cleaning up that pee.
Oh man, I've already done it, but I'm gonna go at it again tomorrow, I think.
Go at it again.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Thanks for your encouragement though.
That does it for this episode of the Your Favorite Band Podcast. Big thanks to our friends Matt and Matt from Reliant K for being on and chatting with us. Go buy Air for free. It's amazing. And go check them out on tour this fall with Switchfoot. Find a show near you, because I am. Guys, thank you so much. Share the link, yourfavoritebandpodcast.com, and subscribe so that Dave will release a really bad song. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another great interview with one of my favorite bands of all time. That does it. Have a good week, guys.